The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello and welcome to Family First. I'm Randy Rolfe, your host, and I'm really excited about our show today. We're going to be talking about what pets can mean to your child. And there's so much about interacting with a child's between the pet and the child. And 37% of American households have at least one dog, and 32% have at least one cat. That's over 72 million pet dogs and 81 million pet cats in our country. And that's enough for more than one for every child. So what impact does having a family pet have on your child? And on this show, we're going to be talking with one of the country's top experts on dog and cat care. Tracy Hotchner is the author of both the Dog Bible and the Cat Bible, and she actually started her career as a book author with pregnancy and childbirth. So I'm going to be very interested to talk to her, particularly because of her interest in babies and children and their moms, and then how pets fit into the family. She's the ideal person for this topic. We'll be talking about how family pets can empower children with important qualities like responsibility, compassion, empathy, and respect for nature and for other creatures, along with them learning to appreciate communication and relaxation and fun and play. And you're going to be getting useful tips of how to introduce a pet and when, and how to transfer responsibility. That can be an issue in families, and how to keep your pet healthy. And Tracy Hotchner knows all about this. She's one of the world's experts, the Dog Bible, everything your dog wants you to know. And the Cat Bible is everything your cat expects you to know. I love that. And her books cover everything from medical issues to training, nutrition, and problem solving in the home with your pet. So she's recognized as one of the foremost pet wellness advocates. She has two weekly live radio programs on dog and cat wellness. Her show Cat Chat airs Wednesday nights on the Martha Stewart channel of Sirius XM Satellite Radio. It's a great show. Her show Dog Talk won the prestigious Gracie Award in 2010 and now tapes at the WOR studios in New York City and is available as a podcast and on iTunes. And Tracy also gives talks around the country, not only to pet lovers, but also to veterinary students. And she originally became a best-selling author some years ago when she wrote Pregnancy and Childbirth, exposing misunderstood issues about conception and all the way through the childbirth experience. She sold 1 million copies and appeared on Oprah and the Today Show. So welcome, Tracy. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Randy. It's great to be here.
I've always had pets in my house, and I think that I remember as a child, our birds and bees discussion was about our cats having kittens. So it's always been a part of child rearing, and when I was a child and with my own children, we always had pets. And I'd love to just start out by asking you, how did you come to write about this subject? I know you had a history as an investigative reporter, and you started when you had your own children, you decided to bust some of the myths about that process, and now you're doing the same for people with pets.
Actually, not technically correct. The only children I've ever had are what we call dependents, not descendants. The only children I've have ever had have four legs, although I don't actually look at them as my children, although many people do refer to their dogs and cats as their children and refer to themselves as pet parents or fur parents. So I think that the book grew out of the desire to do for people with dogs and cats what I did for people considering or in the midst of conception and growing a new life, which is give you information that probably the conventional wisdom or the authority figures may be influenced in the advice they're giving you based on economic reasons, training they've gotten, old-fashioned ideas. That was certainly true about pregnancy and childbirth. And where dogs and cats are concerned, definitely in terms, most particularly nutrition, is a topic on which, unfortunately, the authority figures cannot be trusted. And basically what we're feeding our dogs and cats is the equivalent of feeding Fruit Loops. And I speak about that brand name, which I talk about brand names all the time on my shows because everything I say is the truth. So I can't right. be... I can't be accused. People call into my shows and say, can I say a brand name? Sure, because the label on everything tells you. When the U.S. government says that Fruit Loops is a great way to start breakfast for a child, and it has five cancer-causing synthetic colors in it, and its main ingredient is sugar, you know that the authority figures, the U.S. government, the people that tell us what to eat and whether food is safe for humans, if that's the advice they're giving, the moms and dads of America, we know that we have to make better decisions for ourselves. And so that was one of the many things I discovered about dogs and cats is that basically we've been told to feed them the equivalent of Fruit Loops. And there's no mom and dad out there that reads a label and doesn't say, what? I'm doing what? I didn't realize that's what was in that box or in that container. So that was my desire. The interest that I have in children and pets is both pro and con. The con being do not get pets for children when they're too young to actually either handle them safely, be safe around the dog in particular, or take that responsibility we're talking about so that it doesn't become another burden on mom and dad and something mom and dad resent. And one more thing for moms and dads and kids to gripe about. It's bad enough to remind them to brush their teeth, do their homework, put their pajamas on inside right. But if, in addition, there's a constant monitoring of did you walk the dog, did you water the cat, did you clean the litter box, did you brush the dog, I think that is actually really a negative addition to the family. So when you have a 5 or a 6-year-old, even a 7 or an 8-year-old, depending on the personality of the kid, it's very unlikely that child's going to take any responsibility that really counts because animals are a full-time responsibility. 3 meals a day, or in the case of cats, 2 wet meals a day, and dogs, 2 wet meals a day, but certainly many walks and brushing and going to the vet. And I think that the idea of the summer dog or the Christmas kitten only works if you have parents with a lot of time on their hands, an insane amount of money where they can have help that does all that work. But to expect it of their very young children, I think, is unrealistic and, in the end, unfair to the kids, who all children want a puppy or a kitten, and there's no way a child can imagine the amount of work that's involved any more than they can figure out how you made a Thanksgiving dinner. That's not how little kids think. They're just in the here and now. So I think it's terrific to add them when kids are of a school age and of a personality that they can take that responsibility. Unless you have a parent who's dying for a dog or cat and doesn't care that the kid does any of the dirty work. The parent's delighted to do all that for themselves. So I think that's just the big caveat, because otherwise you wind up with people buying puppies in pet stores, which is just a horrible, horrible place to get a pet. All good pet stores refuse to sell pets because they all come from puppy mills, every last one of them. And then they wind up abandoning them to a shelter because of this burden and stress on the family of taking care of the pet. So not only do you have the stress of the parents nagging the kid and the kid not being able to remember that the dog needs to go out at 11 p.m. as if you'd let your 7-year-old go out in the dark anyway with a dog on a leash, but then the child sees this beloved pet being given away which of course sends a horrific message to the child. If you aren't good and you make mom and dad annoyed, maybe we'll give you away. I mean, that's the message to children. So it's a really, to me, a really loaded topic, getting pets for small kids. I think it's, you know, if you have friends or relatives with dogs or cats and they're child-friendly, which is a whole other issue, then visit them that way. You know, maybe there's a bunny in the classroom. But I just think that the topics you talked about are so important and really important to making great citizens of our kids. The respect for other creatures, respect for nature, understanding how, you know, life cycles work, whether it's food in one end and duty out the other. I mean, just things that are fascinating to children. But by the same token, having it under your own roof is a whole lot of expense of time and money. And it's just something that, not enough people stop to consider. So that would just be the thing I would beg people. The dog Bible and the cat Bible, both, just like pregnancy and childbirth, had a first chapter that really ticked some people off. And the first chapter was like 20 things to think about before you decide, are you going to be a good parent? Do you really want to be a parent? And are you the right age, or is your lifestyle correct to be a parent? And most people don't want to bring those things up. You know, it's like, well, don't be so negative. Well, I think you have to be realistic. And you have to tell people the reality of, in the case of babies, we all know what those realities are. But puppies and kittens are no less work. You're just not diapering them, but you're basically dealing with all those same elimination issues constantly, as well as visits to the vet and all the things that might come up about a child other than developmental, because the cat and dog develop on their own. We don't have to worry about stimulating them. But those issues are very similar. So certainly the mom with a toddler and a school-age kid and maybe even something crazy like a job, boy, would I say, please don't get a dog. I mean, maybe a cat, but not a dog. Unless you have a stay-at-home dad who loves dogs and thinks walking the dog 4 or 5 times a day year-round, boiling summer, freezing winter, is fine by him and a chance to get some fresh air. So I just think that it's important to be a little hard-nosed about it so that the people that do choose to get a pet really understand what they're getting into and do it wholeheartedly.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Those are such important points, Tracy. As an investigative reporter, I now understand that you were coming from that point of really wanting to get the hard facts and having parents take the time to figure out what kind of parents they want to be. Is this the right time? Do we have the economics or whatever are the important factors? And it's the same with a pet. And I said I grew up with pets, but my parents never required us to do it like it was just some heavy chore that we were all going to get stressed about. They loved the pets. They took care of them until we were ready to help. And that's just like having a new sibling. You let them help as they're ready. You don't say, well, now you have to diaper your little sister.
And yet, Randy, when if not us, our parents were growing up, there were lots of families with 5 and 6 kids. And the oldest child did have to take care of the other children. It was expected. They had to do laundry. They had to do diapering. They had to babysit. So, you know, times have changed. There was a time when parents were either burdened themselves or really saw that as part of family chores. But you're right. Your parents understood it as a nice part of the family, just like, I don't know, getting a speedboat. You know, the kid could come along for a ride, but the parents wouldn't expect them to, you know, deal with the motor or drive the thing or get it in the water. I mean, so it's really that level of commitment and work to have a pet.
That's
unless
so
you live
true.
On a giant farm, in which case you can have a barn cat, but even today it's hard to have a barn dog because roads are everywhere and dogs will get hit just the way they used to when we were growing up. You always saw dead dogs or heard about people's dogs being killed by cars because everyone ran free and everyone says, oh, those were the good old days when kids could bike all day, which they could, and nobody was scared of the boogeyman. Who knows where the boogeymen were, but they really weren't. They didn't seem to be in our neighborhoods in those days. And kids, you know, were up from dawn to dusk, and everyone's bemoaning, oh, now they're always at the computer and doing horrible video games and texting, and if only they'd go out and play, but it's too dangerous to go out and play. But there really were dangers, at least in those days, to pets. who got
yes.
run over.
Tracy, we're up on a break, so this is very exciting. So we'll get right back to it. So please stay tuned to listen to Tracy Hotchner about where your pet fits into your family.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
We're talking with Tracy Hotchner today. She's the author of The Dog Bible, Everything Your Dog Wants You to Know, and The Cat Bible, Everything Your Cat Expects You to Know. And she also has two weekly live radio program shows on dog and cat wellness, one on the Martha Stewart channel on the Sirius XM satellite radio, and one at WOR in New York City, available on podcast and iTunes. So she's very available to answer all your questions about pet care and whether to have a pet and when to have a pet. And we've just been talking about the things you need to consider when you bring a pet into the home. And I wanted to ask you, Tracy, about what if parents have different feelings? Like if the father has always had a dog and he definitely wants to have a dog, and the wife wants a cat and she thinks the kids should take care of the dog, and the husband loves taking the walk and getting away from her, whatever.
There can be any permutation of that, and it's definitely a struggle in families. I know a number of kids, a couple of my godchildren, who would have loved to have a dog growing up, but the father, in both cases, for whatever reason, would not want a dog in the house. Period. Done. That's it. So if you have one parent who, for whatever adamant reason, doesn't want a pet, you do not want to be lobbying and nagging, and, you know, whether you're the other spouse or the children. If that person feels that strongly, they're probably, if mother or father, the ones who are putting the food on the table and the roof over your head. And anyway, they're the adult in the house. And you have to respect someone who feels that strongly negatively. There's no way. I've never known of anyone who successfully cajoled or talked into or browbeat or Chinese water tortured one parent into saying, oh, all right. Because then you're going to have that person always saying, oh, there's cat hair under the couch. Oh, God, that dog is barking. Everything will be an irritation. And obviously in families, what you want to do is dial down friction, dial down discord, and make the home as harmonious and mutually respectful a place as possible. If you have parents, or you are parents, who each of you likes a different species, I know couples, they've said, okay, we'll get a dog, and when that dog dies, then we'll get a cat. And I would recommend it in that direction, because a well-fed cat, meaning one who has never fed dry food and only fed wet food, can easily live to 20. So you've got to have the cat second, I would say, because the dogs are always more short-lived. You can also find dogs and cats that do wonderfully together. another reason to get an animal from a shelter. I would say with any age child, even a teenager, or I could even say especially a teenager, because you're either, you know, a young school age kid or a teenager, but both of you are pretty self-absorbed at those two ends of the child spectrum, and therefore unreliable to do all the things necessary to raise a puppy. I think there's very few people who genuinely have the time, the energy, and the patience to raise puppies. It's why I recommend highly that people either adopt from a breed rescue. Many of the breed rescues, it could be any breed you want, dachshund rescue, pug rescue. They have loads of dogs, everything from seniors to ones with physical disabilities to youthful ones to nearly puppies who have been discarded, or perhaps they were almost show dogs who didn't work out. But they're less work because they're already house trained. And if they're past a year, year and a half, they're not going to chew everything in sight. So it's like the difference between, you know, if you're going to adopt a human, you get an infant, you got to go through all those stages. Everything goes in the mouth. The house has to be child-proofed, or in the case of puppy, puppy-proofed. You get a school-aged child, or you get a middle-aged or a youthful dog, and those people or dogs have bladder and bowel control. They can communicate better. I think the analogy is only useful if people don't sort of understand how much work and trouble a very young puppy can be. So if you get from a shelter a dog or a cat, you can get both, because a good shelter knows which cats are comfy with dogs and knows which dogs are safe around cats. So you could actually make mom and dad or brother and sister all happy if you're willing to take in two animals from a shelter who the shelter is willing to put into a room together and see how they do with each other. And then you have like the instant Noah's Ark without a lot of muss and fuss. So that would be my recommendation if you want to start from ground zero. There's the other problem of people who come into a marriage with a pre-existing pet. Then you have, well, anyway, they married each other, so there's no point complaining about it later. I mean, if the guy had, you know, two West Highland White Terriers, and or the bride had a Siamese who meows a lot, as Siamese will, they're very, very vocal, you can't very well complain about it later because you did get married knowing that. But then, you know, at some point, the other spouse may want to add a different kind of pet. And it's a negotiation like so many things. You know, do we want to get the more expensive cable or not? You know, do we want to take a trip or save that money for an addition to the house? So it becomes a negotiating point. Where kids are concerned, I really think that the idea, I know a single mom in New York who had told her two kids that they could have a puppy, which I begged her not to get, although it seems to have worked out, in New York City, in a medium-sized apartment, when they reached, I forget, I think it was seventh grade or something. And it has worked out. I mean, I haven't heard any screams of, oh, God, I wish I'd listened to you. But they are out on the sidewalk in the middle of bitter winter in New York City, you know, trying to get a young poodle to poop and pee and not have frozen paws. So I think that, and these children had been, I think being a single parent is a special burden in terms of how easily you can give in to, oh, mom, please, oh, dad, please, please, please. I think that every child wants a puppy and a kitten. There are very few exceptions. The fact that they want it is absolutely meaningless. Many of them would also maybe like a jet plane or, I don't know, live in a castle. I think it's that the fact that they want it is meaningless. It really has to be the parents who are completely on board with it and want it too, just because it's how much work it is.
Yeah, I think that's so important. We have a little grandson now, and he takes care of the fish, and I think it's a good thing to start with goldfish.
Definitely. It's a brilliant idea. Randy, that is exactly one of the things that I say, I think, either in the dog Bible, probably the dog Bible more than the cat Bible. I mean, get hamsters. If you want to see what it's like to clean a smelly hamster cage and, you know, do whatever you need to do to keep a hamster well, I mean, that's really manageable.
Yes,
and they don't live that long. So heavens forbid everyone, the kid is bored in 5 minutes. It depends on the child. There are kids that will sleep with the hamster, if you will, and others who after 5 minutes are like, next.
Right.
So, you know, next with a dog, okie dokie then, 15 years later. That kid really just liked the idea, saw a movie, saw a cartoon. So I think it really has to be driven by the parents' wide-eyed, realistic realization of how much work goes into it. The other topic that I like to always talk about with kids and dogs is the dog bite prevention issue. The statistic of how many dog bites there are in America, the number is going up. It's astronomical. It's hundreds of thousands. They're mostly to children,
really?
And very frequently in the face. And these are not pit bulls. These are not the presumptions people make. Oh, those must have been dangerous dogs. Those must have been big dogs. Not at all. I think that the vast majority is preventable with the control and education of the children. Dogs use their teeth to protect themselves when they're cornered, when they're frightened. Most bites come out of fear, and children need to be taught from the earliest age, in the same way that you teach them about the extreme danger of the road. They're not scared of cars. They'll get in a car. They'll help dad or mom wash the car. But the idea that cars are dangerous, the very same thing that you could like and enjoy and go on a long family trip, or, you know, some lucky kids even have a TV in their car. But by the same token, that same family dog or any dog that you could like and love doesn't represent all dogs. And also, there are situations in which that lovable dog will bite you. And it is usually provoked and completely preventable. So I think it's really important for people who have a dog in a family, a very tolerant dog, sometimes a golden retriever, very often it's a pit bull. Pit bulls are so tolerant of being, if you will, mauled by children. I've seen it over and over. They're a dog bred to fight with other dogs originally. The very bad ones are taught that from the time they're teeny puppies, so they're quite dangerous to other dogs. But to people, they have a genetic predisposition to be real lovey-dovey and extremely patient, certainly more so than a dachshund, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a dog who's that tolerant and you have allowed your children to roughhouse with the dog, which is very dangerous, always dangerous, never okay, or to chase a dog, or to let a dog chase you, or to hug a dog, all of these things are a stepping stone to being bitten. And parents are ignorant of this, and I don't mean stupid. I mean they don't realize it. No one ever told them. No one ever taught them, unlike you who grew up with animals, or me who grew up with a virtual barnyard in suburbia. We realize that animals are not human, and they have completely different ways of expressing their needs and defending themselves, and that mouthful of teeth is there for a reason other than eating dinner. And children's faces are the nearest and closest thing to most dogs. So when a child frightens, irritates, alarms a dog, or harms him, pulling hair, pulling tail, poking eyes, pulling ears, things that parents that really need to be reeducated allow their children to do as though it were a stuffed animal. That dog can easily growl or bare his teeth. Parents do not know even what those warning signals are, and other dogs won't show the warning signals. They'll simply go to their teeth. Those dogs are often euthanized as if they were dangerous. But the danger is the child, and the child remains in danger even if that dog is sadly put to sleep, because any other dog the child does it to can be as easily provoked. So hugging, I had Victoria Stilwell of It's Me or the Dog just now on Dog Talk. In fact, and Dog Talk, by the way, Randy, is now live again on NPR. So it's live on WPPB, Peconic Public Broadcasting, and Robin Hood Radio, which is the whole east end of Long Island, all of Long Island, southern Connecticut, the Berkshires, Massachusetts. She came on the show, and it's now available also as a podcast so people can find it from today forward, talking about dog bite prevention, working with a company, a nonprofit called Dog On Safe, which does a lot of child safety in the schools. And we were talking about one of the most threatening things you can do to a dog is hug it. There's nothing in dog body language that is hugging. There's nothing that dogs do to each other that is like a hug. So a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old going over and throwing his or her arms around a dog they know or a dog they've never seen, to me it's like looking at someone pulling the pin out of a grenade, and the parents are looking the other way. They have no idea how incredibly dangerous that is. So it's something that people really have to take into account, whether you own a dog or don't own a dog. You said the statistics. There are tens of millions of them all over the place, and more people with and without two-legged children bring them with them everywhere. And they're not child-safe dogs. They're often dogs who've never been around children. They often are empty nest dogs owned by grandparents or parents where kids have all gone off to college. You hear this a lot of people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s getting a dog that they pamper as if it were a child. They cook for it. They sleep with it. They never go anywhere without it, ever. So that dog has often no knowledge of little children, doesn't know what they look like, smell like, sound like. And little children are very different than big humans. Dogs do not perceive them as a shorter version of us. They're really another creature to them. They have high-pitched voices. They scream. They yell. They move very quickly. They move erratically. They fall down. They bump into things. You know, kids are kids. But to a dog, that's a whirling dervish. And the calmest dog may shrug his or her puppy shoulders and say, oh, well, whatever happens next, you know, I'll just deal with it. And other dogs want no part of it. And unfortunately, the owners of the dogs are ignorant of how stressful children are to that dog. And certainly the parents have really not understood the idea that dogs absolutely cannot be approached by a child. A dog you don't know shouldn't be approached. Parents often have this idea, you go up to the person and say, may we pet your dog? They usually say that while reaching out to pet your dog.
Right.
They say it as if, may I take a cookie? But may I pet your dog is not, do you mind if I put my mitts on that fur? You really mean, is your dog comfortable with that? But by the time you've asked that, it's too late. The kid has
too
already
late.
Patted, poked, hugged, kissed. All these things that to a child, you know, moms and dads say, make nice, make nice. Well, make nice to your baby brother, or make nice to your stuffed animal, or make nice to another kid in school means a hug, a kiss. Right? Those things
right.
are the things we need to tell our children to never do to a dog. So, you know, these dog bite numbers go up and up as there's more and more dogs in society. I think
my goodness. Well, we're up on another break, Tracy, but I do want to get back to this and come back and hear more from Tracy about how really to help your children interact properly with their pets. So listen in.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Hi, I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and we're having an exciting chat with Tracy Hotchner, who's the author of The Dog Bible and The Cat Bible, and she's a foremost pet wellness advocate in the country, and she has two weekly live radio shows on the Martha Stewart channel on Sirius XM and also on NPR. in New York City. So you can download those shows and you can also call in and get your questions answered. But we've been having a wonderful discussion about the pros and cons of pets. And I love the idea, Tracy, that you've been so clear about that they're different species. They have different body language. They have different expectations. They have different needs and different desires. And when they're around children, they may react in ways that a parent doesn't expect. And I know my father was a doctor, and he had, as I said, we had many pets in our home. But he had his best friend said he would never have a cat in the house because when he was an intern, he saw a child whose face had been scratched up by a cat. And he said he would never have a cat because he was afraid the cat would come in and scratch his children's eyes out. So that's a little the other extreme, but it happens. And when you
Well, no, that doesn't happen. That doctor didn't get out into the real world enough. It sometimes happens to people in the medical profession. You know, you spend 10 years in medical school and being an intern and a resident. Cats never, ever attack somebody. Ever.
No, no.
Ever. And they also don't suck the breath out of babies, by the way. That old wives' tale, like, don't let a cat lie on your... You wouldn't let a cat lie on your infant while he's sleeping anyway, but they don't suck their breath out. This goes back to medieval times when we used to do witch hunts.
Right.
In fact, a cat can be a much safer pet for a small child because they can get away. Now, if that child that had his face scratched was trying to hold and squeeze a cat,
yes,
who was trying to get away, the cat may have scratched to get away or protect or defend himself, but they're quick. And the ones who don't like kids or who don't like the small, fast-moving, loud, shrieky kids, they're running. They're under a bed. They're up a cat tree. That kid doesn't have a chance of catching them. So the cat knows how to avoid. They're not a confronter. They're an avoider. They only confront when absolutely cornered. And even then, I would highly recommend that moms and dads keep their cat's claws trimmed, just the little curvy part. The Cat Bible describes very easily how to do it. It's not scary. Doesn't hurt you. Doesn't hurt the cat. Once you get them used to it, it will also keep them from hurting any furniture or drapes or carpets. It's just a little curvy part that actually causes the damage. And if you did it once a week, if you do your kid's fingernails once a week, do your cat's claws at the same time with the same clippers, by the way. If you want to use separate ones, that's fine, or squirt them with some alcohol. But it's the same human clipper that you can use for cat's claws because they're that tender. They're not tough, except for in rare cases. So I would say that a cat's pretty safe. The issue of allergies is an interesting one with kids and pets and cats in particular. Unless you have a child who's diagnosed at an extremely early age as a highly allergic child, been allergic to, you know, the formula, been allergic to the strawberries and the whatever those early allergens may be, it's actually helpful to grow up with pets. It's been proven scientifically that children who grow up with pets have less of those allergies later. What it does is act sort of like, if you will, an allergy shot is supposed to. It makes that little child's immune system have to deal with the dander and the saliva and the other things to which we are actually allergic in pets, and the immune system figures out how to cope with it. So if you have a very allergic child, you would actually help them be less allergic to those critters later if you wanted to have them around. So that's kind of handy. So the cat is a great pet for kids. Certainly there are cats who are delighted to be patted, not squeezed, and rarely picked up, because a small child will always pick up a cat in an awkward way, not supporting their front and back end, and cats don't like that, so they leap away. They don't put up with this nonsense. You know, they're cats, right? We're here for them, not the other way around.
Right.
But I would say that there are very many cats that have what is again described in the Cat Bible, because people without children don't understand it, a very low threshold and tolerance for physical affection. So you can stroke that cat maybe 10 strokes, maybe 3 minutes, and then if you don't notice the very subtle, as you said, body language of that species, which is totally different from a dog, flicking at the end of the tail, ears flattening back, body stiffening, giving you the eye. If you don't notice that and stop petting immediately, you're going to get bitten, because the cat's already given you all the signals she has, and you've ignored them. You've continued to stroke her. So you think, I have an evil cat, I have a horrible cat, I got to give it away. No, you have a cat. They don't want a whole lot of that. A small minority will love tons of endless affection. Others will put up with it or enjoy it for longer. But many of them have a short, short window. So this is another reason why with a child's not going to pick up on those subtle body language, details. I mean, if the adults don't, how would the child? So again, you have to monitor even affection between, even very civilized affection between a child and a cat for that same reason. I mean, this almost sound like, wow, it's pretty negative about all this. But obviously, I'm quite the opposite. I'm a huge advocate of everybody having as many pets as their heart and home can fit in there. Rescue first, adopt, don't shop when possible. I mean, that's always the mantra, right? And always spay and neuter. Sorry about you getting to watch those kittens born when you were a kid, but we don't really let anyone see the real birds and bees anymore just because that puts 8 more kittens on the planet and, how do you find homes for them? Or in the case of a Labrador Retriever, I knew a woman who said, I want my children to see the miracle of birth, so our Golden's going to have 10 puppies. And then what? How are they going to get 10 really good homes for those puppies? Do you have the Discovery Channel? Okie dokie then. You turn that on for those kids if you want them to see something giving birth. Or buy a video. So, I think that a bunch of these issues are just ones that are glossed over and people don't talk about them. And cats and dogs can, of course, teach children great awareness for other species, help them develop even senses and sensibilities about what dogs and cats are looking at, how they smell things and the world, how they feel things with their whiskers and paws. I mean, it just gives them really a very alert child can pick up just wonderful information about the differentness of us and animals, and we'll also generalize it to all sorts of animals and then be, we hope, a kinder, gentler person who won't, go on captive hunts and won't wear fur coats and all the things that follow from that. So there's a million great reasons, but just a lot of cautionary notes, which it's just a shame that they sort of aren't handed out with that parenting booklet that you get, when your kids are born, the one that they always forget to give you. So, there's so many things that we just don't all have time to research or think about or learn about, and then we find ourselves in the middle of a pickle wondering, how do we get here and how do we get out of this? And I would just beg people not to abandon those pets to a shelter or even, like some people do, just open the door and say, bye-bye, nice knowing you, because these problems are solvable. They're all situations which can be managed. You just need another rule book or another set of suggestions about how to do that. And I'm just personally always available to people, radiopetlady@gmail.com, if they have questions or concerns. I'll just go to any length to make sure that people can live harmoniously with their pets and in this case, their kids, and not abandon them because they've gotten so frustrated. I mean, I fully understand the frustration, but there are solutions.
That's great. When my son wanted to have a ferret when he was 11 or 12, and I didn't know too much about it. And I said, well, let's study it for a couple of months and tell me about it and then decide if you want to have that ferret. And he took good care of the ferret because he knew it was going to be a responsibility. He bought 2 books about them and learned what he was going to have to do. And I think that your advocacy for pets is it needs to be couched in the precautions because it is so important. It's important for the pet, but it's also important for all the family relationships. And we're ready for a break, but for our last segment, I want to talk a little more about how the parents interact with the pets as a model for how the children should do it and for relationships in general.
That's a great question.
When we come back from the break, let's finish up with that.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
We're back again with Tracy Hotchner, the author of The Dog Bible and The Cat Bible, which is everything you need to know about these wonderful pets in your home. And we've been covering some wonderful topics, how to keep your children safe around pets and to be fair to the animals and when to introduce them and the questions to ask yourself before you get a pet and how to deal with it if you and your partner have different tastes around pets. And one of the things that was so important that I liked hearing was that you can't just give away a pet without having a real impact on your child's impression of relationships, because you've tried to teach the child to care for and love this pet, and then if they're too much trouble or you're moving, away goes the pet. This is something you want to avoid. And so I wanted to talk a little more about how parents interacting with their pets demonstrates for their children how they feel about relationships with the world, with other species, with nature, and with other people. So, Tracy, can you address that issue for us?
Yeah, it's a really good one, and one that I actually don't think of that often myself, and it's really relevant because we all know, whether it's mandated by law or by our own personal ethics, that we don't hit children. We used to hit children. We used to think it was good to hit children and even good to hit wives. I mean, within our lifetimes, these were things that were acceptable and even, you know, advised. We all obviously know that we don't hit anybody. Hands are not for hitting, which is, you know, taught in school, and it's taught in places where women and children have gone to avoid abusive spouses. It's usually women, which is why I put it that way. You don't see so many men in these sort of places. But I've actually volunteered in retreats that are for women trying to get away from domestic abuse. And pets are very locked into this issue. The abusive spouse will often hit or kick the dog or cat, threaten to kill the dog or cat. And it's one of the biggest warning signs for a woman to get herself and her children out of a home, because what these men, and there's an awful lot of them in all strata of society, will do is they will act out on the pet what they intend to act out on the children or wife or already have. So in a healthy family and a healthy relationship where there is no abuse going on, sometimes people, grown-up people, will still think that they can hit a dog, less so a cat, but they will think they can hit a dog either with an open palm, kick it slightly or hard with their foot, get out of here, talk to it like that. And what they're modeling for their child is a way that they're showing is acceptable to something you consider weaker than you or smaller than you or something that will tolerate that and not pull a knife on you or hit you or kick you back. So any abuse, verbal or physical, that anybody is tempted to show to a dog or cat in their frustration, in their impatience, there's lots of dogs and cats that are annoying, either because they're not the perfect dog or cat or they're just being truly a dog or cat and just doing their own thing, you know, as God put them on the green earth to do. They somehow think that it's different than not hitting or yelling at or cursing a human. But a child sees the world as one piece. It's not divided up into those we can hit and those we don't hit. So everything that you do with your pet, what the kindness, the patience, the repeating of rules to a cat, come on, kitty, use your litter box when the kitty has gone yet again on grandma's rug for all the reasons because you didn't know how to prepare the proper litter box and all these things that the nicest of people don't know. We certainly don't want to say in the household, that damn cat all roasted for dinner if it pees one more time on grandma's rug. Now, adults may think they can vocalize like that and that it's only a joke or I don't really mean it or it's only a cat. But the child hears that as a way you can express yourself and your impatience or your frustration in life. And it's obviously not a message you would ever really actually intentionally impart. So it's yet another way, just like parents shouldn't swear in front of their kids and, you know, try to have sex behind a closed door and not in front of their kids. It's one of those things you just don't do in front of kids. Of course, really, you shouldn't be yelling at or striking your dog ever. But certainly in front of a child, not even indicating. Well, there are people who will say to a kid in the supermarket, do you want a spanking? Do you want me to whop you? As if it were the threat to make the child stop trying to eat, you know, too many gummy bears or screaming in the aisle. But I don't know that those parents actually do whop their kids or spank them or lock them in the closet. Maybe it's just a verbal threat, but to a child, it's a very fuzzy line. So you certainly don't want to be acting out any of that kind of behavior with a pet to further confuse a child about the way that we all try to interact with each other with mutual respect and kindness and firmness and consistency. And certainly there's consequences to our actions, but the consequences should never be violent or abusive. And same with the dog or cat. You know, I mean, there's consequences. So if the dog eats the shoe, really, the mistake is the humans who shouldn't leave shoes on the ground if you have a very mouthy dog. But maybe what the dog has to have is a timeout, which, by the way, teaches the dog absolutely nothing. But you could show that to a child as a way of modeling what you would like a child to understand, that if you are naughty and do something you've been told not to do, that you have to have a timeout, or whatever in your family is the nonviolent, non-abusive way to teach a lesson. So the pets can be very useful in that way in continuing what is your moral and ethical way of raising your kids. And we just certainly hope that your feet and hands are never involved in anything but a hug for your kids.
Exactly. Oh, that was so well put. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that advice. It makes so much sense. And kids are always watching their parents, and how they interact with their pets is just as important as how they're talking to the neighbor. And I couldn't agree with you more. That's wonderful. And we just have a few minutes left, but I'd like to address, you mentioned briefly the importance of feeding the animals appropriately. I'm a big advocate of nutrition can help your children achieve in school and be more calm and collected and cooperative. It's so important for the animals, and it can be a model to the children. We're careful with the dog and cat, just like we're careful with you.
Absolutely right, and it's one of the ways that I try to help people understand pet nutrition is to understand their own nutrition. Everybody knows that eating a lot of highly processed carbs is bad for you. It's empty calories, and it's why we're all fat. It's about highly processed carbs. It's not about eating really nutritious any amount of quality protein, quality vegetables, fruits, good grains. It's highly processed junk food, full of sugar, full of corn syrup, full of corn leavings of various kinds. And the dry pet foods, any of them sold in a supermarket, are guaranteed to be made of low-quality, harmful ingredients. Harmful because the origin of the basic ingredients in commercial pet foods sold in supermarkets, which is not the premium foods, not the quality foods, they're not sold in supermarkets ever. Unless you go to, you know, I don't know, Whole Foods is another story. But we don't all have a Whole Foods near us. Those ingredients of those foods, a little differently than our endless fried, salty, greasy, snacky stuff, those ones are made from really horrible remnants of the human food processing chain. So the food not only isn't nutritious, but it may be harmful. It can have all kinds of chemicals. It can, in the case of many of them, be made from protein sources that are literally, no exaggeration, roadkill, things found on the side of the road by those who collect the carcasses and send them all to a meat rendering plant.
Wow.
Along with animals that died at the slaughterhouse, too sick to go into the human food chain, ones who had horrible diseases. All of these protein sources, which is what they are, can be boiled and irradiated to the extent that they won't kill your dog or cat, but they can easily sicken them. And the cancer epidemic with dogs is that one out of every two dogs will get cancer in their lifetime. That's 50%. And we don't know how much of that comes from food, but if you are what you eat, I always advocate to people, try and give the healthiest, freshest, most unprocessed foods to your dogs and cats. And in the case of cats, all dry food is what I call kitty crack. It is addictive to cats because of what is sprayed on it to make highly processed, mostly corn-based food palatable to an obligate carnivore. Every cat should eat meat only. Their digestive tract and genetically is only designed to have meat in it. No carbs at all.
Exactly. Well, we're up on the end of the hour. It goes so quickly, but what's the best way for people to get more of your information, Tracy? This
is, well, if they want to learn more about their dogs and cats, they can go to thedogbible.com or thecatbible.com. If they have a question that they can't get answered there, and I would ask you, please, to look there first, they can write to me at radiopetlady@gmail.com or any Wednesday night at 8 p.m. call into Sirius to the Martha Stewart channel. Tune in to channel 110, or there's a phone number on my website. You don't have to have Sirius to call me. It's toll free.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much. It's been great information and stuff people don't always hear about.
Well,
pets.
I appreciate really you appreciate giving it. Me the chance to have a little soapbox, Randy. I much appreciate it, and I appreciate your sensibility about it, too. You keep up your very good work educating people.
Oh, thanks so much, Tracy.
Have a great July 4th weekend.
You too.
Take care.
Bye now.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.